Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Lori, I'm going to show you something.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
Does this girl look familiar to you?
Yeah, she does. I worked this case.
This is a girl who you said was beaten and killed.
Okay.
This little girl is me, and you told somebody that she's dead.
Wait a minute. You didn't disappear?
I'm right here.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
How do you explain being completely wrong?
I can't explain it. I can't explain it.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni, this is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. Starring Vince and Joe, that would be you.
Me, Vincent Caldoni.
Yeah, and me, Joe. And we are back with another exciting episode, which is actually a continuing episode of last week. Apologies, first of all. We said it, we were going to drop it later in the week, but it turned out that upon recording, it's a bigger story. And so we decided to just hold off and drop it as a whole fresh episode for you. Actually, the stuff that we're going to drop this week is really juicier than the stuff from last week. So,
I kind of feel like it is.
Yeah. So, what happened last week? We told you a nice little story about a detective, and you're going to need to like head on back and listen if you haven't already listened to this, because this will seem confusing otherwise.
This will make no sense. You will have no idea why we're talking about any of this.
Yeah, we'll still be here. We promise when you get back. But so this detective is trying to catch this guy who he suspects has murdered his wife. It tried to make it look like she just ran off. He gets kind of badgered into working with the psychic. The detective's name, by the way, is Bob Lee, and formerly with the Lake Oswego Police Department in Oregon. I retired several years ago, actually. He did work there. I checked. And he kind of got like hoodwinked, dragged into working with a psychic named Lori McCory. And together, Lori and Bob bust this story wide open. They solve the case. Their perp goes down for the murder. The detective and the psychic actually fell in love, got married, lived happily ever after. And yeah, they recently, apparently, I hear, moved to Central Oregon, bought some land, and built their dream home there. Mm-hmm. Living happily ever after. So yeah, nice story.
Turbo.
And it's been told on a couple of TV shows, I think. Psychic Detectives?
Yeah, that's the main one. Yeah, Psychic Investigators.
Yeah.
I want to hold this episode up as a parable about examining your sources. I was doing the research for this, and I find this fascinating tale, which gets held up as one of the cases where a psychic really, truly solved a homicide. And not just one where there weren't some lucky guesses, but where she actually called it and contributed to the investigation. And it's got twists. You know, it's got twists. It's got turns. At one point, you doubt the psychic's ability because it seems like she's getting stuff wrong. And then in the end, it's proven that she was batting 1,000 basically the whole time.
That's right, damn it. She was right, even. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, she pretty much nailed it. She got some details, some very specific details, really right on the money. I like to think that one of the things that makes The Shocking Details a good, if somewhat under-listened, you should tell a friend, podcast, is that we dig deep. A lot of podcasts, they will just basically read you the wiki for their topic.
Yeah, those other podcasts.
No, I get it. I do. Because first of all, if the hosts make that entertaining and you haven't heard much about this topic, it's a good thing to space out to on your train ride to work or whatever.
Oh, sure. Nothing wrong with it, really.
And I know all too well just how insanely difficult it is to turn and burn research on a podcast like this. I live it every week.
Well, it's not as easy as you'd think, because unfortunately, if you do a deep dive into a lot of these stories, you'll find find many conflicting stories about it. You know, a lot of different accounts, and so you have to like really, really sift through and weigh the evidence and decide which one is true and which one is BS. You know,
right?
And
yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, if doing a podcast wasn't your full time gig and you had everything else in your life going on, how much time do you have to spend, you know, visiting the Wayback Machine, digging around in the Hall of Records in another county? I mean, we do some of that, but it's almost never as much as we wish we could. Mm-hmm. You know, if we did that, then we'd have to put out an episode like every 3 months. Yeah. That would be fun. If you guys want us to change the format.
It'll be a pay-per-view kind of thing where you got to pay like $100 per episode or something. But yeah, we could do that.
Because it would take a lot.
Send us an email. Let us know what you think. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want us to do that, I would have fun just like turning myself into an investigative journalist. Instead, I'm just a podcaster.
You are.
Our sources.
Yeah.
And something here smelled off.
Well, of course there was, because first of all, there were no real primary sources, and this could be found on the interwebs.
Yeah.
Although that's a fact of life that I've learned here is that from my podcasting career is not everything is on the internet.
Yeah, you think it should be, but it isn't.
That's when Vincent took his life into his hands and went down to the Multnomah County Library, which, you know, if you've ever been there, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, it was fine. But basically there's just two firsthand accounts of this murder from 1986.
Yeah, available on the webs, right?
Right. That you can go with a Google search. One is an interview on Larry King Live that was guest hosted by Nancy Grace, where Bob and Lori outline their experience solving the Burke murder. So we talked about last week. And that it was from 2004. And then there's the Psychic Investigators episode from 2006, which also features just two sources, Bob
and Lori.
And that's all we could find, really. I mean, there were blogs and whatnot out there that came out right after 2006, but they're just parroting the other stuff that we talked about. We couldn't prove to our satisfaction that any of what we told you about last week actually happened.
Yeah, no, it's true. I know both you and I went out and did a lot of searching, looking for anything from the local papers, like, you know, any mention of it at all. There was nothing. Mm-hmm. I actually finally called the Lake Oswego Police Department and talked to a lady there in records. Mm-hmm. And I asked her all about it. I said, okay, here's the victim, here's the perp, here's the detective. Can you tell me anything about this? Did it really happen? And she said, well, I'd never heard of it, but she put me on hold for 5 minutes or so. And then came back and said, yeah, you know, I talked to one of the people that's been here a long time. And he says, yeah, it really did happen. Apparently, so this guy had been with the department since 1985. So, and then I said, well, how come I'm not seeing anything about it in the papers? And she's like, well, I don't know. it was still kind of a head scratcher.
Right.
But yeah.
You know, you watch one of these shows and they all kind of have a format. And I think this is actually what initially got me curious is that you would think if you were going to do a show like that, right? And this is a cable TV show. It's got a budget. There's reenactments. You'd think that they would have more than just two people, a married couple, to tell the story. Where is Alexis?
Like a family, reporters.
Reporters. Yeah, I was covering this.
There must have been other police involved in this, and you know, besides Bob,
prosecutors, right? People like that. They usually have at least a few people like that on the show. I even watched another episode of Psychic Investigators just to kind of compare, and yeah, they had three or four interview guests, not just two married people. So, yeah. It is a crazy fact that there really are in modern times just two people telling the story, Bob, Lori, no one else. Mm-hmm. Then you have to ask yourself, can they be fully trusted?
Well, I don't know. Let's say for one thing, I'd have to say, honestly, I don't think Lori can be.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. I mean, she might be a wonderful person in many ways and trustworthy in many respects. But as far as her claims to be a psychic detective can go, that's a little questionable.
And
she had a rather spectacular downfall on TV as a pop culture icon. We'll talk about that in a second. But there's also her odd background, the hard to find details surrounding the Burke murder, which gave us both kind of a pause when hearing her stories. Let's do a brief bio of Lori. This is Lori McCory.
I think if we just run it through in a timeline, we'll get a more interesting picture of both who Lori McCory, or Lori McQuarrie, said differently, is, and then also the Burke murders, or Burke murder, and I think I have a little better picture of what really happened than you would get from even our last episode. So let's start in 1948.
So she was born. And then 18 years go by. We don't know what happened. It's a big black hole. She could have been in the freaking Soviet Union. No, I'm just kidding.
I think she was a fairly normal
young woman. I assume she was having a normal childhood. But then in 1966, something happened.
Yeah. So that was that horse riding accident that we mentioned.
That's right. She fell off her horse, banged her head, and went into a coma for 3 weeks.
So here, this is a quote from her website. I can't prove any of this ever happened, but I'm going to take her faith that she actually take her on faith that she actually got in this accident.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from her website. I don't know who wrote this. I suspect it was Lori writing in the third person, but
it could have been. It could have been Bob too. Actually,
could have been Bob. Maybe she hired a web designer. It's hard to say.
Well, what I looked at, she has a website, and mm-hmm. and I read at least one part of that website was acknowledged to be written by Bob.
Lee. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So maybe Bob wrote it.
Yeah.
So this is on what I'm getting this straight from the website. Lori was in a coma for 3 weeks, and after she awoke, her life has never been the same. She began having dreams. Like newsreels on black and white film of violent plane crashes.
Ooh.
Shockingly, a few days later, she began seeing television newsreels of the same airline disasters actually happening. Unquote.
Ooh. So she wasn't just a psychic. She was actually a seer. She could actually see the future. Yeah.
Right. Which is interesting because, and we'll get into this, there's a little bit of a mid-career shift from precognition to empath type behavior.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're a psychic in the sense of, like say you're investigating a murder that's already taken place, it could be said that you're picking up telepathic communications from other people involved in the case,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. which I find to be actually possible. I think telepathy is.
I'm certainly open-minded that it could happen.
Yeah, but as far as seeing the future, that's a whole different kettle of fish. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's go. There's an article in the Oregonian in 1984 mm-hmm. that says that she started giving psychic readings around 1976 professionally.
Yeah, I think she'd been doing it for a while, like for friends and family and stuff.
Yeah, and then finally decided to go pro. And so this article, again, 1984, when it was printed, it says that she quit her job as a registered nurse in 1982 to pursue a career as a psychic. But then a separate pair of articles from years earlier in the same paper tell a somewhat different story, which is about her aunt dying of unspecified causes in a facility where Lori worked.
Or at least was managed by the same company.
Yeah.
The article is really short and it does not specify. It talks about, but it talks about her suing the company. It doesn't necessarily say that this all happened within the same facility, but it's the same company.
Well, it sounds like anyway, Lori had a major disagreement with her employer, causing her to sue her employer, and she lost the lawsuit, and fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your point of view, et cetera. But, quit, maybe she was asked to leave. Maybe she was fired. I don't know. And
she says she quit, but then she sues them for wrongful termination.
Exactly. So I suspect that she was shown the door, but, and who knows? I mean, maybe they blackballed her in the nursing profession or something. I don't know, but that might've been another reason for the career switch. So she decides to stop being a nurse and start being a psychic.
Yeah.
Which actually sounds like more fun and less gross, if you ask me.
So, I wonder if the 1984 article was kind of candy coating this disastrous period in Lori's life, trying to sue her employer, losing her aunt. Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound like a happy time. Maybe it was, and I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
But by the time of the 1984 newspaper article, Lori was giving weekly walk-in type readings in a restaurant in Lake Oswego. And in that same article, she makes the following predictions for the coming years, I believe between 84 and 90, was maybe not. Economic collapse in the United States. Out of control food prices. A Vietnam-type scenario in El Salvador. Ronald Reagan retiring before the end of his second term due to health issues.
That's, from the mid-80s, I was alive back in those days. And these are not actually risky. I mean, a lot of people believed this stuff was going to happen back in those days. So she wasn't going out on a limb by saying these things.
Of course,
none of those things came true, of course.
Not really, no. I mean, I guess you could sort of fudge some of the stuff and say, like, there was some inflation. But even then, you kind of have to.
She scored 0 for 4 there in those predictions, I would say.
I'd say that's an 0 for 4. Yeah, I think if you're really trying to be charitable, you might give her like a 0.25 out of 4.
Well, you could say out of control food prices. Even that one doesn't pass muster. So the economic collapse, eventually we did have, Well, we did have that little brouhaha in 2008. I mean,
yeah, but even, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's you being pretty charitable if you're giving her almost 30 years to work with there, 20 something years to work with.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but Lori also in that same article teases her work as a consultant in a case in San Ysidro, the behest of a family of a missing person.
So this is her first public acknowledgement that she's actually a psychic detective, helping the police solve cases.
Yeah, and it really is actually the first time she's ever been in, at least in that I can find, in the media as a psychic at all. So it's kind of her big coming out. And this is a pretty substantial article right here. It's pretty long.
Must have been a slow news day. Actually, we have a lot of those in Portland. I don't know if you know that.
Well, also, you got to understand, so if you're a youngin, or maybe if you're from a smaller news market, the Oregonian was a pretty big paper back then. It covered a lot of the state, and they would change out the metro section depending on which part of the state you lived in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I would have never read this article because I lived in Portland proper, and we got the Portland metro section, and this was for the western suburbs is where this article ran, in the lifestyle section of the Portland metro. So I would have never even read this, even if I was sitting around reading the metro lifestyles section.
Yeah, same here. I was not in that part of town either, so that's why I never heard of Lori. Yeah.
So I guess all I'm trying to say is I think the western suburbs of Portland had a lot of slow news days in 1984.
Oh, yeah. No, Portland's a pretty quiet town, frankly.
I can't figure out what case this is, the San Ysidro case.
No.
She doesn't mention it by name. I really didn't want to spend too much energy trying to track this down. Obviously, there were disappearances at that time in San Ysidro, but I don't. I would take so much more research to try and dig into this case. And needless to say, I don't think the case was ever solved or Lori would tell us.
She would have said something about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's see. So her career went upward from here because after that article, she became a feature on a local AM/TV show and also on some late night radio programming in the Portland area as well.
Yeah, so when you do a record search through the Oregonian, this whole period is just littered with just TV listings of her. Her appearing on AM Northwest, giving predictions. She did several New Year's Day things where she did predictions about what the next year would hold.
I could do that. It's like, what the next year hold? Some ugly arguments, some bad weather. Yeah, let's see what else. Yeah, someone will get a flat tire. Let's see. I'm dead
pretty
on.
Pretty much.
What else? It's 85. Yeah. She worked as a consultant on the disappearance of Luke Treadway. Mm-hmm. Did she not? Yeah.
She did. Luke Treadway was a 10-year-old boy who went missing walking home from a friend's house in my neighborhood, actually just down the street from where I catch the bus to take my son to school. So,
should we call you a person of interest here? I mean, what are you saying?
Yeah, my 4-year-old Caldoni was definitely guilty. Lori also didn't live anywhere near this neighborhood when I was betting. Whatever, doesn't matter.
But
Lori was obviously unsuccessful in her efforts.
Yeah.
She did not locate the boy. He's actually never been located. But here's what the Charlie Project had to say about poor Luke Treadway. The serial killer Douglas Franklin Wright confessed to Luke's murder a week before his execution by lethal injection in 1996. It was the first execution in the state of Oregon in 34 years. Wright dropped all of his appeals and volunteered to die. Wright murdered 4 homeless men in 1991, leaving their bodies by roadsides. And in 1970, he was convicted of killing a woman and her mother. He stated that he'd abducted Luke at random, kept him alive for 36 hours, sexually molested him, and then shot him 6 times in the head.
Wow, that's a little overkill, don't you think? I mean, 6 times?
Wright said that he'd buried the child's body in a remote area in the vicinity of Mount Hood near the Wasco County line, but a search turned up nothing. Mm. Nevertheless, authorities believe the confession was accurate.
Yeah.
Quote.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, my understanding is that there is actually some controversy over this, but I think the Luke Treadway thing's a story for another time.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his motive would be unless maybe it was one of his serial killer buddies who committed the crime and he just wanted to take the heat off his friend, maybe. But I don't know that serial killers really network. They probably do these days thanks to the internet, but probably not in those days.
Yeah, this is kind of the precursor to the Alexis Burke disappearance.
Yeah, so it's what we're about to get to, because this was, of course, Luke Treadway was in the 80s, and now Alexis Burke, of course, vanished in the 80s.
Yeah, these would be about a year apart.
Yeah, but the thing about her, she vanishes, but the papers didn't carry it, which is kind of inexplicable, because it's actually kind of a juicy story. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it may have been the family did not want a media circus, or maybe the cops thought it would hinder the investigation and not help. Maybe the cops just sort of kept it to themselves. I don't know. But
I just find it weird that I can't find any trace of this. Nothing in the TV media, nothing in the Oregonian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you think there would have been at least a few column inches devoted to this. You know, this young mother of three vanishes, you know. You think there would have been something. I know.
Well, because it would have come up looking through, just the metro ticker for the western suburbs.
But it turns out, actually, there was some stuff in there that you found on microfiche in the library. But it might just be that the Oregonian, they're just lazy and cheap and haven't actually digitized a lot of their archives and put it out on the interwebs.
I am fairly confident that at least in this time period, every issue and every edition of the Oregonian is available for study at the library.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but as far as
I wasn't missing issues or sections.
No, but I mean, as far as it being digitized and put on the internet.
Well, no, yeah, but that's what I'm. Well, what I'm saying is they didn't. I'm not looking on the internet. I'm going through microfiche. I'm working with the research desk assistants. I was able to basically read every issue of the paper, one way or the other.
Yeah.
And it's just
not on the internet. There. Yeah.
Yeah. Her disappearance was not reported. It really isn't until late August of 1987 when Alexa's body is finally discovered. So all that stuff that Lori and Bob talk about, the vast majority of the Psychic Investigators episode, you just got to take their word for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it went down, because there is no record of it that I could find, you know, anywhere.
Huh. And then so between her last sighting, it's about a year and a half before her body is discovered.
Yes.
August 87. And then it finally makes the papers.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is interesting. But article is a bit vague, right? I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Lake Oswego chief basically isn't talking to the cops. He does reference a lengthy investigation, but really gives nothing and tosses the reporters over to the DA. Now, this DA gives us kind of the first glimpses that can back up any part of Lee and McQuarrie's stories. Haub, that's the DA's name, mentions the discovery of the car in Vancouver. So that settles where the car was found.
Yeah.
He mentions that Alexis's family were concerned she was a victim of foul play. We learn that Alexis's middle name was Sarah.
Okay.
We learn that the family had just moved to Lake Oswego moments before and hadn't even unpacked. They'd only been there for a few days. They'd been living in Milwaukee, Oregon prior to that.
Oh, that explains the murder then. I mean, moving can be stressful. So
I think the family was under a lot of stress. I'm wondering if they had, I don't really know what all the circumstances were, if they'd overextended themselves. I actually, because they printed addresses and papers back then, was able to pull a Joe and go out on Street View and check out their addresses. Mm-hmm. And the manufactured home on the edge of Milwaukee, to this day, still faces a farm field, was quite a step. It would be quite a step up from that home to the fairly nice apartments in Central Lake Oswego that they moved into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if there was a lot of financial stress
around this time. Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, surprisingly, actually, Lake Oswego and Milwaukee are not that far apart, but they're separated by the river.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they didn't move super far. They're all kind of all in the same area. I found interesting in this article that they referenced that there had been suspicion that she was a victim of the Green River Killer,
Gary
Ridgway, because two bodies associated with the Green River killings were found within miles of her grave.
But
within,
of course,
2 miles.
But of course, her grave also happened to be on property that was owned by her husband's father.
Is also correct. Not mentioned in this article, but I believe that is correct, but they don't say that in this article.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do give some insight in this article about what the gravesite looked like. This was not just a shallow grave. It was barely a grave. It was really the debris covering the grave that made it not obvious that a body was there. That's how it sounds based on the report. So
this is criminal behavior I find inexplicable. I mean, Christ's sakes, get a shovel. You know, do a little digging. I mean, for Christ's sakes, people. I mean, hey.
Yeah. They also state that the cause of death could not be determined. Haub says that.
Yeah.
And most tantalizingly, this is really the thing that caught my attention. And I would just, I would just love it if the reporters at the time could have got this guy to go into a little more detail, because the short article references a source that the DA's office didn't, and I'm quoting here, wish to disclose at this time as providing the critical information needed to uncover the body.
Exactly. And what does that mean? Yeah. Was it
Lori? Is that the ex-girlfriend?
The ex-girlfriend that dished on him? Yeah.
Yeah. Or was this the dad of the friend of the friend of the friend or whatever?
Or was it
Bob himself?
Or was it maybe the brother, you know?
Yeah.
Because the brother had helped move the body and hide the, get rid of the body. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea.
He said also he didn't expect any arrests anytime soon.
Right.
Yeah. Which is odd because Bob Lee said he arrested Burke the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is odd if you think about it, right? He's saying, I don't expect any arrests anytime soon. And that could just be a lie. I mean, it's cops lie to the media all the time if it's going to help their case.
Yeah, maybe they said that because they didn't want to give him an excuse to skip town or something.
Exactly.
Although, but if they plan to arrest him, why not just arrest him before they had the press conference and release information? I don't know.
Yeah. But you beat me to it. That was the exact comment I was going to make, is like, get him, then do the press conference. The whole thing's just kind of odd. It's also, and I know I'm splitting hairs here, but it doesn't appear that he was arrested until September 1st. So there's just a gap. They say they got him the next day.
Yeah.
But then records show that it was actually like 3 or 4 days later.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm probably just splitting hairs. But then several
months go by, and it's December of 1987.
This is where things get complicated.
Well, John Burke pleaded guilty to manslaughter. So the cops had the body, and they found it on his dad's property. He was the last person to see her alive, you know, as he himself had admitted. And,
right.
Yeah, and he appeared to be a bit of a turd of a human being.
No.
But beyond that, the evidence was not overwhelming. And when they found the body, I guess it had been decomposed enough. I believe his confession said that he strangled her.
Mm-hmm.
And so evidence of that strangulation apparently was not visible on the decomposed body, which makes sense to me.
But
he pleaded guilty to manslaughter. His brother Kelly Burke was not mentioned in the reportage at all.
No, never comes up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't even cover that aspect of the case. It's interesting lack of curiosity on the part of the reporters I mean, that'd be one thing I'd be saying. It's like, well, how did you find this body? Was it just a random occurrence? Somebody stumbled across it, or you had information, I guess. But as he said earlier, they had a source that they were reluctant to talk about. It could have been Lori, the psychic.
Well,
and you can see why they might be embarrassed by that.
What's infuriating to me is that I can tell from the reporting that whoever had the courthouse beat was at this trial, and yet they don't mention anything about the brother testifying. I actually don't know if Kelly testified against his brother. And actually, if you go back and you rewatch Psychic Investigators and you really read between the lines, they say he agreed to testify. They don't say he did testify.
Oh, yeah, good point. Another thing that probably actually slowed the cops down a little bit is apparently John Burke, again, the husband, apparently he aced 2 polygraph tests. So
administered by 2 separate people.
Yeah. So apparently, he was either a sociopath, or maybe the guy was totally innocent after all. You know, maybe he just pleaded guilty because they just said, hey, dude, you know, you're the husband. The husband did it. The jury's going to believe that you did it, whether you did it or not. So just plead, you know, I don't know. No, I'm thinking he probably did do it. I mean,
I think he did too. And polygraphs don't mean that much. I do think it's interesting that he aced 2 separate ones. He doesn't seem like the kind of brain genius who could do that.
It's not a matter of being smart. It's just a matter of being calm while you're lying, you know?
Maybe whatever drugs he was doing helped him. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be too. Yeah, I don't know. But apparently the case was shaky enough. The DA was a little nervous that they weren't going to get a conviction. So they just let him plead to manslaughter. Instead of taking it to trial and then trying to convict him, which kind of makes sense because, I mean, what do they have for evidence? I mean, they couldn't put Lori McCrory on the stand. I mean, for Christ's sakes, I mean, that's not admissible evidence as far as I know.
Yep.
He didn't fail any polygraphs, and that wouldn't be admissible either anyway. So Kelly Burke, did he testify? I don't know. Or would he have been willing to testify? I don't know.
I don't know if any of that came out as an affidavit or a pretrial hearing. Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
Yeah, no, the whole thing is, and as far as the involvement of Kelly Burke, I mean, we really don't know. I mean, maybe he murdered her. Maybe he's the guy who did it, you know?
I think that also may have been the nervousness is that Kelly Burke puts himself at the crime scene, lied to the cops about where he was. He had access to the family car.
Yeah.
He knew where the body was buried. That was his father's property too.
Yeah.
You could say that the defense has reasonable doubt that maybe for some reason Kelly had done it. he has incentive to lie because that's his ticket out of the slammer.
Well, it is. But also, I just want to say, I don't believe Kelly Burke actually did it. You know, but
no.
But I'm just saying defense lawyer definitely could have made something out of that. Like, you know, like I just said, like, whoa, who's to say Kelly didn't do it? You know, yeah, right.
Now you've got reasonable doubt, and that's all you need. You know, the prosecution come back with, why would Kelly do this?
Yeah.
Do you have something against his sister-in-law? Actually, doesn't really matter because you're just trying to establish reasonable doubt.
So, but it could have been like he was just telling the truth. His brother needed a hand because he had a dead body. He had a dead body stashed in the living room behind the couch, and he needed somebody he could trust to help move the body.
Burke is almost certainly guilty, but this is not what you would call a slam dunk.
Yeah.
And you can actually catch the judge kind of seem to be voicing his frustrations with the cops and the prosecutors when he sentenced John to no less than 5 years of his 20-year sentence, which would not be I don't think would have been a standard way. Certainly the way he talks about it. He's like, I want to make sure this guy does more time than the minimum for manslaughter.
That's the thing though, is that like that's disturbing right in and of itself is when the judge is basically saying that, you know, this guy could get 20 years in the slammer and wind up serving like 2 years and get let out. I mean,
my main frustration with this is that if this really went down the way they said, he didn't get tried for the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the definition of manslaughter applies here. The man choked his wife to death.
Yeah.
That's not manslaughter.
Not like it's an accidental thing. Although it's conceivable, he could have had an argument that maybe the wife was really into the kinky stuff and she just said, hey, I want you to choke me because I really get off on that.
That's not what Burke said, though. Burke basically tried to say, I choked her, but I didn't mean to kill her. And then I reacted poorly. Now, mm-hmm. that can plead you down. I'm not a legal expert. My understanding is that could plead you down off a man or off of murder one, but it can't get you to manslaughter, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I decide I'm going to hit you in the head with a baseball bat because you're bugging me and you die, that I have stopped committing manslaughter when I swing that bat.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. It's a big
hit. Because everyone knows a bat to the head could get you killed. And maybe I didn't mean to kill you. Not meaning to is not what separates murder from manslaughter, as I understand it.
No, it's there's premeditated. So you wouldn't, you know, maybe second degree murder in that case if you wanted to hit me, but you didn't actually mean to kill me. And then, if you're swinging the bat around randomly and you just happen to smack me in the head without even meaning to, that would be manslaughter.
Yes.
And then, but then if you carefully plan to kill me with the bat, then that's premeditated murder, you know, first degree murder. So I think we've, you know, any lawyers out there want to weigh in on this.
Yeah, I'd love some people's opinion, but I just don't feel like this is manslaughter. And I got the impression the judge didn't either, that he was a little bugged by this whole thing.
But there's a common theme that runs through all of these articles back to your newspaper research.
Yes.
Which is that Bob Lee and Lori McCrory are not mentioned in any of them.
The names do not come up.
Yeah, now I can see why Lori might have been kept on the QT by the police, but why was Bob Lee not mentioned?
I don't
know. Maybe he just wasn't the lead detective. You know, maybe I'm not saying that he was lying. Man, he probably was involved. Perhaps he wasn't actually the lead detective in this case. Maybe. I don't know. But it is weird that he didn't get a mention at all. But
I think I understand why. Not necessarily why he doesn't get a mention at all, but why this case was done the way it was, is that I just don't think that this was the get your man kind of story that Bob and Lori would like you to think it is. I think this investigation was borderline messed up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think at this, especially at this time, that there were very many homicides in Lake Oswego.
No, there aren't. Yeah.
I think that this guy, Burke, I think that better cops, a more prepared police department would have been able to get this guy and get him on murder one. And I think that's why you also don't hear from Alexis's family or anyone who knew her is because they didn't really serve justice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also why, and we're going to get to this in a second, this case goes really quiet for a long, long time. You do not hear about people revisiting the incredible investigation and apprehension of John Burke, you know, on the 10-year anniversary. You don't hear anything like that. It didn't get outside of the metro pages of a mid-market newspaper. It never got a national coverage or anything like that. It really is years and years.
I really don't understand it, to be honest with you. I mean, because this paper, this story did actually have all the makings of a good story, and yet the press was not as excited. But, you know, a lot of it depends on, I don't know what, maybe maybe there was more exciting stuff happening at the time, and I can't think of anything that was happening here in the late 80s, but maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's because the main thing I think is that it just didn't happen. It wasn't quite as exciting a case and as heroic an investigation as Bob and Lori make it out to be.
No, actually, Lori was actually quite the self-promoter. But she never did actually crow about having brought down the Portland Strangler or anything like that.
They called her on Psychic Investigator.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was not the Portland Strangler because we're talking one murder. And, you know, not like the Boston Strangler where bodies are turning up that have been strangled. I mean, it wasn't. So it was not until basically 1994 when the Oregonian, again, runs an article about Bob and Lori, again, in the lifestyle section. Mm-hmm. About their marriage and their romance. I guess that's kind of a cool rom-com kind of story, you know, the detective and the psychic, you know, they meet.
Mm-hmm. That's literally what it's called, I believe.
Yeah, they meet.
It's called The Cop and the Psychic is the title of it.
Yeah, even though they feel nothing but mutual contempt for each other at the start, you know, and they clash, but eventually they fall in love. But
But again, so we're clear about this, it's not that I don't believe them, but the only source for this is Bob and Lori.
Yeah. And so this article in 1994 never actually mentions Alexis Burke by name. It does kind of reference the case. This was a case that brought Bob and Lori together, I guess. Mm-hmm. But even then, I mean, did they really research it? It sounds like they just maybe took Bob and Lori's word for the whole thing. And I don't know how much background
the lifestyle section was doing in the mid-90s.
Yeah. But of course, you know, at the same time, I mean, if you're doing the lifestyle article, it's kind of fluff anyway. So are you really going to, you know, research it that hard?
Exactly.
Probably not. So what happens after this? It's 1994. Quite some time goes by and the whole thing is all quiet, right?
Yeah, there's no reference to the Burke homicide. Lori is still doing some appearances in local media. She's doesn't really go on in the papers much. Things kind of simmer down for Lori in this time period.
But she did actually do a stint in Iraq, from what I hear, which at least she says so. I mean,
she says that. I can't independently verify this, but
she was hired by the government to go find WMD after the invasion of Iraq. So that sounds pretty, that's pretty cool, actually. Actually, if the government had wanted me to give to give me a free Iraq vacation, and I would have claimed to be a psychic too. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Little adventure.
So on her return from Iraq, where she was using her psychic powers to go hunt for WMDs.
Yeah.
She says that the men and her were attacked.
Yeah, she had an escort of soldiers, she says, right?
That is what she says, yes. Yeah. Specifically, they were psychically and physically attacked by ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
In some factory, they were looking for the thing.
Yeah.
WMDs in. Speculations from fans of the paranormal was that Sodom had some kind of ghost army or something.
Mm.
That the ghosts were sicked on her by the Iraqi military. I don't know. The stuff's all pretty out there.
But yeah, actually, even though she didn't find any WMDs, but she had a great story, and she was interviewed by many bloggers and paranormal type people about her, you know, her ghost thing. So that was a lucky stroke for her that she ran into that battalion of ghost soldiers that attacked her. Because I mean, she actually it kind of put her in the spotlight. And and the publicity she got might have led to that interview that she had on Larry King Live.
I kind of feel like it. Like, just if you kind of were looking through web searches, it does seem like she's pretty far out of the spotlight. And then, boom, she's all of a sudden on Larry King.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure how she got there, but I wonder if it had something to do with somebody somehow connecting the dots. I don't know. Because there were a lot of paranormal blogs that were featuring her harrowing tales from Iraq.
Yeah, but luckily for her, Larry King was not around. He was on vacation, so Nancy Grace guest hosted and interviewed her. And actually, I guess it was her and Bob, both of them, right, on Nancy Grace?
Yes. Yeah. I can't find the video of this. I could only find a transcript.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I saw the transcript as well. So they retell the story of the Burke murder and give the basics of the case that you see everywhere else. You saw in Psychic Investigators. And then, of course, Psychic Investigators, I guess, must have been watching Nancy Grace, and they decided to basically recycle the story and do it themselves, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's basically the same story. It's a little expanded upon in Psychic Investigators.
Yeah.
So the Nancy Grace interview is in 2004.
Yeah.
The episode of Psychic Investigators airs in 2006. And it seems like it was a hit, because this is really, those two things are the root source of 99.9%+ of the info you'll find online about the murder of Alexis Burke.
Well, that's the interesting thing about this, is that these people have a TV show. There's a lot bigger budget, more resources than you and I might have. And yet they still didn't bother doing any real research on it. They just got Bob and Lori there and to tell their story, and that's about it. They didn't actually trouble to, you know, track down anybody else to interview.
And if they would have tried, they would have been like, wait, you know, unless they came to Multnomah County, I guess they were here, but unless they went to the library or whatever to look the stuff up, I'm not sure how their researchers would have verified this story. I don't know. Maybe they gave them background, you know, like someone who they could call at the Lake Oswego Police Department or whatever to back up what was being said.
Well, I think more likely they didn't bother verifying because they didn't give a damn. But that's just my thinking.
I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, but I'm with you on that one, Joe.
Yeah. But Lori's star is definitely shining a little brighter these days, doing more media appearances than ever. And the story about all of her insights eventually leading the police to the gravesite, you know, and convicting the killer was pretty hot stuff on the interweb. But then you know, things kind of went downhill there about 2011.
Mow, dig, haul, lift. The versatile Kubota BX Series subcompact tractor does it all. Switching attachments is simple, and a smooth hydrostatic transmission makes for easy operation. The Kubota BX Series, rated number one in durability and owner experience. Talk to your local Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo. Go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
CEC Turf and Tractor. On the web at CECTurfandTractor.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
She had a rough 2011, man.
Yeah, she kind of did. Yeah, Inside Edition and all that stuff. Yeah.
So that's the little clip we played.
Only a little bit of that. But yeah, that was kind of funny or sad, depending on your point of view, I guess.
Yeah, but, I don't think, my guess is Lori's not laughing about it.
So they decided to do an expose on these psychic detectives, not just Lori, but about, you know, them in general. And they managed to get her to agree to come on the show. But she was, Lori was contacted by a producer on Inside Edition who lied and didn't say anything about the show. Just said, you know, that he needed her services as a psychic detective because his brother, his young brother, disappeared. Isn't that the story?
No. So you've got this a little bit backwards. So yeah. The idea of this came from, there was a guy who felt that his family had, he had a sister that went missing.
Oh yeah.
And he felt that his family had been exploited by psychics and, you know, people like this. They were looking for attention or sometimes even just money from his family. And so he worked with Inside Edition, and they sent a producer to Lori McCrory with a picture of a girl.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
To say, yeah. And the idea is he has her do a reading and look at the picture. And she says to the producer that, you know, that was his younger sister, and Lori, she's on hidden camera, tells the man that she believes that his sister is dead and that she sees her being raped and beaten with a rock, of all things.
Yeah, I mean, talk about your sensitivity, you know, it's like,
But she does think that the body can be found. Mm-hmm. And she gives him a rough location to search, says it'll be within a couple miles of there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She charges him $400.
Get out your shovel. Good luck, dude.
Just go start digging holes in this,
this area. Okay, yeah. Good luck.
So, meanwhile, the reporter who was the lead on the story, Lisa Guerrero, she contacts McQuarrie at a hotel in Portland for an interview with Inside Edition.
Yeah.
And after a brief interview about her psychic powers, Guerrero asked her to take a look at a photo, and she produces the same photo as was there before.
Yeah, which was, by the way, just a childhood photo of Lisa Guerrero, the reporter.
Exactly. Well, so Lori tells her that she's been working the case, and she thinks that the girl has passed, and then it's really sad. And Guerrero reveals that it's her grade school picture.
And then Lori says something kind of sad, like, So you're not missing or something in that order.
He's like, no, I'm right here.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I actually kind of, I think Lori McCrory is kind of, is at least a low level fraud. And I think Inside Edition caught her.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, I actually did feel bad for her. You can just see her. She's just getting bent over the rail in this episode. And I'd like to kind of have some empathy for her. Like, wow.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the thing about it is like if people want to be psychics and not hoodwink people out of money, I mean, I don't really give a damn. But yeah, it is rather shameful when they swoop in and charge families, you know, desperate families, mm-hmm. good money for their services, yeah. and it's just all BS, you know.
I mean, it is, seriously. Yeah. I mean, look at what's her name, Sylvia Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, that woman has made herself rich many times over off of grieving families. And has done some really terrible stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was her or another one that went on friggin' Montel and said that that one of the women who was abducted in Ohio and was living at Ariel Castro's house was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And gave details about how she saw her dying. I mean, this woman was alive. She saw the broadcast. That's an act of cruelty. Can you imagine being held in a house with a serial rapist, not able to escape for like a decade, and some lady goes on TV and declares you dead?
You know, that's the thing too, is like, for example, when Lisa Guerrero's producer, when they're doing their sting and she sees the photo of her, of young Lisa Guerrero, says, oh yeah, she's dead. Yeah. She was raped. And then beaten over the head with a rock. I mean, that's a little insensitive. I mean, you could just say something like,
she was nicer about it than you just were. But
well,
yeah.
Yeah, but still, there's just there's really no nice way to put that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's pretty horrible. It might be, it just seems tactless to say that sort of thing. You could just say something like, oh, I'm not getting a good read here. I'm afraid that she maybe is dead and something like that. And not make it sound like her last moments on earth were quite so horrifying. You know,
well, yeah,
it seems a little insensitive, I guess, you know, but
yeah,
and well, by the way, I'm not a sensitive person, as anybody who knows me will tell you.
Yeah, you're not super sensitive, but you're also not a pile of crap.
No, and I try not to be, but
you know, that's a thing. That's what I say. I have some sympathy for Lori getting sandbagged like this or whatever you want to call it. But I also really, you know, if that had been, I mean, she knew. I don't know. Maybe she's just self-deluded, but I think she knew in her heart that she was not getting a psychic reading off of this photograph.
Yeah.
And she made a creative decision to make that stuff up, knowing that she was thinking that she was sitting with a person who had lost his little sister, mm-hmm. and had been missing her for years. And that's what she chose to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a hard time, while I find the tactics that Inside Edition used to be a little gotcha dubious, I have a hard time mustering too much sympathy for Lori,
mm-hmm.
if that's the stuff that she does.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's and again, if she
by her own admission, that was not the only time she did that.
Yeah, and you know, if she wasn't charging money for this stuff, you know, it wouldn't be such a thing, you know. But she was charging money for it.
She was happy to take his money, say that stuff to him, and take his money.
Yeah, I would have more. I assign a little more credibility to a psychic who said something like that, you know, and basically it's like, it's $400, but you don't pay me until I'm proven to be right. You know, and then you pay me.
That's impressive.
Yeah. I would have a little more respect for that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But speaking of which, though, you know, this puts me in mind of this, that, you know, I really think that there's good money in this stuff. So I don't know if anybody's going to take me seriously as a psychic, but what about Tess? Do you think Tess would like to be,
Oh, I think, yeah. I think the Tess Carter Psychic Detective Agency could be making money tomorrow.
Oh, well, hell yeah. Especially with her British accent. That would lend her some gravitas, don't you think?
You know, she's got Roma heritage. So, you know, she could say she's a gypsy or whatever.
She's got at least seven tarot decks and a crystal ball. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I'm sure she could. I mean, if not, I'll loan it to her. She can pay me back when her agency takes off.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway,
give her a call right now as soon as we hang up here. Yeah.
Call her up.
Yeah.
This expose, it really did a number on Lori's career. I found one of the funnier things I found was that an event she was hosting in Florida in 2013. It was a Facebook event, or it was a the event wasn't through Facebook. I shouldn't say that. It was an event page on Facebook that I found out about this event. And it was in 2013. The event was canceled. No reason given why. And there is like all these comments about you're a fraud, you're a fake, you're no good, you're a liar. And I'm pretty sure that that very toxic response was might have been why that event got canceled.
I would imagine so, yeah. So she's a fraud. Most of them are. The only real one is, of course, Tess, who doesn't even
Tess
know
Carter. She's good. She'll find your lost cat.
Oh yeah, she's worth every penny. Yeah,
Lori
and she
is
takes
actually,
plastic, by the way.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. She's got the little slider thing that plugs into your iPhone.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Lori's retired or semi-retired. I'm sorry. She's not actually totally retired. She lives in Central Oregon with Bob Lee. Yeah. And she still appears on podcasts sometimes, actually. You can find just with a quick Google search.
Yeah.
And she goes on blogs, and she will take your money for a reading if you make a special appointment. Mm-hmm. So I should probably go get one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
maybe we can have Tess do it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Show her a picture of me. Yeah. This is my father. What happened to him?
Joe, I can't find him.
Yeah,
I know. Actually, now I kind of want to do that. Maybe we should cut this and then go do it and make that part three.
Let's call Tess right now. all right. So anyway, that's it. I guess that basically is it. We got a story here about a disappearance, a murder, a psychic detective, and her stellar career. It's beginning. It's apogee, and then it's her sad fall from grace.
It's quite the ride.
Well, and the lesson here, of course, is never give an interview to Inside Edition, I think.
Yeah. That's not true. Inside Edition did or does. Are they still around?
I have no idea. That's a good question.
They do actually a lot of softball stuff. They just sometimes get it in their minds they want to go out and bust some chops, and it's usually because you're not a celebrity that they're going to be.
Yeah, I usually think of Inside Edition as kind of like the People magazine of news shows. You know what I mean?
It's a good way to put it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They're kind of more tabloidy, you know, kind of stuff. You know,
they're very tabloidy, but they're not like it's not like TMZ or whatever.
Yeah.
I was disappointed because I wanted. So when I go into an investigation like this, Joe, if I have a bias, and I talked about that in the first episode, I'm an open-minded person, especially about, you know, paranormal things, psychic phenomena. I keep an open mind, and I would generally say I believe more than I don't, but I don't like these psychic detectives. I have a bias, a personal bias against them. When I hear they're involved, I grit my teeth, and I really wanted my mind to be changed. I wanted this to be the one where there was good evidence that a psychic really helped the case, that a psychic was a real psychic, and that there could be at least a possibility that some of this stuff was real. And I was disappointed and angered as I dug into it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not saying that no psychic has ever helped out in a case.
I'm not saying that either.
Yeah, I mean, and so there might be such a thing, and it might actually be kind of real. I don't know, but
I reviewed a lot of cases, and granted, these are not in depth. I didn't have the time or the ability to go into it, but I looked at a lot of cases, write ups of a lot of cases, and I was looking for the one that looked the most legit.
Yeah,
and this was it. This is the one I picked out.
Yeah, no, this one actually has been the whole thing about the whole psychic investigation. It's been recycled into the print media from. Mm-hmm. You know, from television. And so, it goes to show you how lazy some of those people are.
And bloggers too.
I believe the Portland Tribune did a write up on this whole thing, which basically kind of regurgitated a lot of these claims. I found that one online.
Yep. So. And the Trib operates in Lake Oswego. So they had every bit the ability that I have to go down and check out the records and see what really happened.
Yeah.
So,
check
your sources.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't believe a story just because you saw it on TV.
Yeah, or read it in the papers. Yeah.
Or read it in the paper, right? Yeah. But while we're here, I do just want to say, I do think that while they were vague to the point of enraging to me, and I still don't know why, I would say the Oregonian, though, never seems to have ever been duped by this.
Yeah, no.
They never really reported on Lori in anywhere but the lifestyle section, and... they never covered the Burke murders from the angle of the psychic who solved the case at any point. Oregon Live is still around. They still could do this, but I never found that. So I'll give them at least a little credit. I think they did their homework.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. The, either that or the police just withheld that whole aspect of it, of the investigation.
Well, I think
because
they did.
Number one, maybe they were embarrassed by it. Or number two, mm-hmm. maybe they considered it to be not even relevant to the case. It's like, well, the psychic investigator shows up, says some things, but it had nothing to do with them solving the case. And so, you know, they didn't really, you know, even mention it.
That's always possible too. I think Lori also became the police's, she became their way to maybe make some shortcuts and play hunches.
Mm-hmm.
And what I don't wonder is if the Lake Oswego Police Department, if Bob Lee had relied less on either his own intuition or Lori's intuition or whatever was going on, and did a little more boots on the ground police work, you know, gumshoe stuff. Did anybody see the Burke car? Did anyone notice who was driving it? Were there witnesses? Did the neighbors hear something that might be helpful? Did, you know, can we, you know, pull any types of records? Can we get some receipt information? Just some old fashioned detective work may have actually gotten them to that murder one conviction that we would have wanted. I think everyone who knew Alexis, you know, anyone who had any, you know, anything invested in the story wanted to see John Burke go away for more than 7 measly years on manslaughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is true. He's, and they had how many kids? 3 kids?
3 kids.
Yeah.
Yep. One with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
And their mother was taken from them, and he didn't really, you know, he never really had to pay for, you know, for orphaning his children.
Yeah. Well, he didn't quite orphan them. He would have to die for them, but he half orphaned them. You know, he took away their mother. That's a big deal.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure John Burke didn't raise those kids after that. And I don't know what happened to him, unfortunately.
I imagine they were either raised by the grandparents or found their way into the foster system. Lucky kids.
Yeah.
But anyway, he said sensitively. But I guess it's time to wrap this up before
I think we're going to put this one to bed.
Yeah, before I offend anybody else. So just stay tuned briefly for Tess Carter reading out some vital information like our email address and such. Social media stuff, and of course your weekly reminder to please leave us a rating and a review, and a good rating and a glowing review, of course.
Yes. No, I just, yeah, it helps so much. We're really trying to grow our audience. I made the joke about us being underheard. We're kind of, you know, we're kind of at this awkward phase where we're trying to get a little bigger, and it would really mean a lot to us if you could give us a review, tell some friends.
Yeah, and of course, while you're out there too, don't forget to go out and downvote any 1-star reviews that are out there. Downvote them hard, and encourage your friends as well to do so, and upvote some 5-star reviews.
Well, actually, that's kind of the fun thing about our reviews. They're actually, our star rating is great. We just need a few more people typing away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So come on, people, type.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will catch up with you next week.
Yep, that's right.
You enjoyed this one.
With another hard-hitting episode of The Shocking Details. Ta-ta.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Hang on. I got a meowing cat here. Hey, buddy. Hi.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.